The following podcast is a presentation of the Washington College of Law at American University. Any unauthorized use or distribution is strictly prohibited.
Okay. Reiterating, just for the record, because I forgot to turn the tape recorder on. We're doing session three, the long distance job search and attorney search firms, as part of the 3L, 4L job search workshop series. We'll be talking a bit about using and working with attorney search firms, but principally focusing our comments on the long distance job search. And certainly have comments to go over, points to consider, but also let's make this dynamic and interactive given, you know, we could almost do a one-on-one counseling session with the group here. And the resources handed out are instructive and insightful, but of course nothing beats an individual counseling session, coming on in, setting up an appointment with myself, or others, perhaps you know, subject matter experts in practical public interest, for instance, in planning out your own job search going forward, because that's going to be most important. Some of you may have been in session one, legal job market trends, perspectives, and common mistakes, where you may have heard my opening remarks with respect to just filling out some statistics. I'll take 1.2 minutes to reiterate some of those, because if you haven't heard it, it's important for perspective, so as to manage your approach, but also manage your expectations going forward. Discussing the realities of timing of job offers, just nationwide, and law school graduation statistics, when you look at employment numbers, you typically have about 70%, actually WCL is more than the 80% at graduation employment rate, which is pretty strong. But when you see the 97, 96, 99% employment rates, that's measured 9 months out under the NALP and the ABA guidelines, because they recognize that many folks are doing long-distance job searches, and the dynamics are perhaps a bit different. Many folks are looking in small, mid-size companies and firms and federal agencies, perhaps, that don't have their funding yet, that don't know their hiring needs yet. So there's very natural timing dynamics to the job offer and acceptance post-law school that you should just at least be aware of. Now, obviously, you're here, and we want to work so that you're on the other side of that equation for sure, but I offer it out there just as a sort of statistical reality, just to help put your minds in that kind of a framework for your edification. But again, we want to work hard to have your job before graduating. Another important factor to note is you see a lot with the law student looking for their first job, his or her first job, and trying to hit it on all fours, making everything, you know, what's going to be the best job, going to give you doing exactly the kind of work that you want to do, paying exactly what you need to get paid, and preferably in this context in the right city. Now, that's what you want to look for sure. But you have to recognize that you need plans B and C. You need to have some flexibility in some of those variables, because there might have to be some give and take. And you want to understand that, prepare for that. Again, not telling you to lower your expectations. I'm just saying to let's keep your eyes on the prize, but also develop a feasible plan B and C, because plan A doesn't always come first and foremost right out of the box, right out of law school. And again, this is your first job out of law school. So to the extent that there's some ebb and flow in it, recognize that, and you're statistically highly probably likely within the first 3 years of practice to be moving on to another employer anyhow, and as you see yourself gradually elevating up the career ladder into positions that are, if they're not right out of the box, more and more positioned to all of your criteria, city, locale, practice area, economic spread, etc. Okay. So let's move into the subject matter that we want to talk about today. Dan, with respect to attorney search firms, let's talk about that first. Can you give us an overview of what they do exactly, and actually what they do? What's their principal function?
Search firms, what we do, it's sort of, we work as dual agents, but technically, if you've taken agency law, our fiduciary duty is to the employers, because they're the ones that pay us. So in an average day, half of my job is law firms, employers asking me to find particular attorneys that match a certain criteria of experience, credentials, and other characteristics that they're looking for. and call these people and bring them to the law firms to try to introduce them to the law firms. The other half of my day is working with people that contact me saying, I'm looking for a job, this is what I'm looking for, can you help me identify and locate firms or employers that match what I'm looking for and help introduce me to get a foot in the door. So that's what we do in terms of permanent placement. Now, it's important to realize we don't work, law firms or most employers do not work with search firms for graduating law students. They only work with experienced law students, so it's important to realize that we do not, you know, you cannot, if you're looking for a job in another city in a permanent position, do not contact search firms because they're not going to be able to help you, because firms don't feel like they have a justification to have to pay for inexperienced attorneys when they have other ways of hiring people directly. Now, there's the exception of temporary attorney placement, which is contract positions, which often involves a lot of document review or other types of, temporary attorney positions where it's not a permanent position. It's not doing, for the most part, associate-level work. It's more litigation support, although a lot of times you end up doing very similar to what associates do, but the title's different. In those types of situations, you can work with, they're not really called search firms, they're called, temporary attorney contract agencies.
And we're doing a program on contract lawyering at several of those agencies, as you'll see in the front page, April 10, in room 527 at noon, so.
So the thing to realize is don't use search firms or don't try to contact them because it's a waste of time. So you're probably asking, what am I here for? But I can talk a lot about the long-distance job search because I was a law student myself, and I work with a lot of people that are making long-distance moves, people coming to D.C. from other cities or people going to other cities, and we can share a lot of the wisdom that is very applicable for law students as well.
And before we completely give up on working with attorney search firms, Dan, might there be any online resources that they might offer for sort of a geographic read on the marketplace that it might be worthwhile for law students to hunt around? Say, I'm looking in Atlanta, but I look at, I don't know if BCG has
I mean, you could look at different websites like our company, BCG Search. We could search all the job listings on different search firm websites to see where there are more positions clustered, which can give you an idea of the market. And you can also call search firms, say, I'm a law student, I realize you probably can't work with students, but I just wanted to know if I could have just a few minutes, 3-4 minutes of your time to ask you a couple of quick questions about the market. And you'll find some nice people that will be willing to talk to you and give you some insight that could save you hours and hours. So it's all about talking to the right people, which if you talk to the right people, you'll have a better chance of getting the right job.
Yeah. So, again, very highly unlikely, very improbable that they'll be able to assist you right out of the box in terms of getting you a job. But there might be some resources there, and you should know about them, and you should recognize that they do have value for you, if not in the immediate, at least perhaps in the intermediate phases of your career going forward. But as Dan said, he's not here to tell you about, well, can't work with you, thanks for the pizza, bye. We're going to talk more principally about the long-distance job search. And because we have only half a dozen of us here today, let's go around the room to the extent you're comfortable sharing. Where you're targeting, which city, state, and if you're comfortable sharing, for example, you are, and why you're motivated to search in that particular jurisdiction.
And any other questions you have about the long-distance job search?
Yeah, I mean, well, we have a bit of an agenda, but we certainly, like I said, we can make this more dynamic than lecture-oriented. Would you mind starting us off?
I'm looking in either New York or abroad.
What's abroad mean?
London, probably.
Okay. So, New York City, I assume?
Yes.
London. And what are your motivations? Why?
I think it'd be awesome just to live in New York City, but I also have a decent amount of contacts there in the legal field and just in general.
City pull, I'll call it, and then sort of a social network, is that fair to say? Okay.
What area of law are you interested in, if you know yet?
Corporate real estate, but that is just such a bad market right now that I'm leaning towards really, I like international law a lot, so I'll ask that.
International corporate?
Mm-hmm.
Okay.
Okay, who's next?
My name is Kelly. I'm looking into the Bay Area, so San Francisco. I'm going out there actually because my boyfriend got a job out there, so he's moving, and made a decision to move out there together. And I do not have any contact. I've never been, like, we've been up there for vacation, but finding it's very difficult because I know absolutely no one out there. So.
Mm-hmm. Is your boyfriend, he's going out there because of a job?
Okay.
So he's hired and they're bringing him out there. Good. So that's a key. So what practice areas are you targeting?
Family law.
Family. Great.
I'm also looking at New York. My family's there. And as far as a practice area, IP or litigation. I'm in the IP clinic.
Science? Do you have a science background or trademark?
Trademark.
Copyright.
Next.
New Orleans.
Okay.
And my wife has a couple job offers down there. We lived there before Katrina.
Okay.
I'd like to go back, help rebuild a little bit. And for me, criminal or litigation.
Okay.
My name is Olga, and I am looking to go to New York area, New York City area, so it could be Connecticut possibly. And the reason is just looking at, I guess, where professionally be most feasible for my boyfriend and I to find work. He currently lives in North Carolina, but decided that maybe that would be the best place, and in his industry, New York is really big, so I think we are both trying to move in that direction. And I mean, New York is also closer to where my family lives. They're in Vermont, so it's about half the distance, so that would be a nice perk, but because I'm definitely not going there to Vermont. I want to do litigation.
Okay. My next door neighbor has family in Maine, and said got 9 inches of snow the other day on top of the 8-foot snowdrifts banks that are still there. So yeah, I hear not going back. Vermont isn't, I don't think, as egregious. You call that egregious? It's cold.
My preference for a city which is not on the list is Chicago.
Mm.
I have social friends, not professional friends there, so okay. Fell in love with the city, so I go there about 3 times a year, so it's just, I've been in D.C. 7 years, and I want to get out of the Beltway. And practice would be civil litigation, specifically employment discrimination,
okay.
Which luckily I have noticed is still like growing and strong people.
That's likely to continue,
yeah.
So people get laid off. Good. Anything else to add to that as we discuss? There's a lot of places we could start with that, but I would say that it looks like you all have, well, at least, unless you want to start off with something, I was going to sort of integrate it with this. The rationale is something to be smart about, you know, understanding why you're doing it. Some people are really just sort of scattered and just like, look, I'll just go anywhere. I just need a job. I'm applying all across the board. And although that, you know, that's not a healthy way to go about it, it's much better to have a rationale and a focus, because that's going to help you translate into an effective job search in terms of, one, identifying the practice areas that you want to go into, two, assessing the market realities and the health of that marketplace, of that market within the geographic region you're hitting up. And three, give you a much more credible presentation to employers, which is very important in the long-distance job search. Employers very much want to know, what are your motivations for doing this? Especially, not you're all hitting up larger cities, but there's definitely a little bit more insular in places such as New Orleans, for real, and San Francisco being large and international as it is, the legal market can also be a bit difficult to penetrate there. These are just sort of broad strokes that we're going over, but New York and London are much more malleable in terms of welcoming or taking in foreign lawyers, and Chicago perhaps as much, but not as much, you know, a little bit more than San Francisco perhaps, but a local network is going to serve you well in all of these jurisdictions. The first thing I think might want to ask, maybe we'll go around and see, because again, we are so few of you, what have you done? I've met with several of you. What have you done in your job search, and what hurdles are you running into so that we can perhaps address those? They'll be relevant to all of you. What job search barriers have you, what job search efforts have you taken to target New York City, the Corporate Real Estate International, and or London, and what kind of resistance, if any, have you gotten at this point?
Well, I met with you, and I contacted...
Was it worthwhile?
Mm-hmm. Yeah, I contacted some attorneys that both graduated from my undergrad institution and from here.
Uh-huh.
Just about, like, their help, and some of them have been responsive, some of them have not. Some of them have been way too high-end, like, to even have time to respond, but...
Let's sort of pick this apart. Why do you say that? What was your approach in contacting them? What was the ask?
I emailed them and just told them that I have similar background. A lot of them actually had the same major that I did in undergrad, as well as some interests. I tried to focus on people that had the same interests that I did.
Mm-hmm.
And a lot of them responded really well to that.
Great.
Just that some of them were from much larger firms that have already done all their hiring, but they're still willing to talk to me at least and give me some insight on, like, maybe smaller firms or, like, companies that are hiring out there. So it's going well. I just still haven't found a job yet. But
okay.
There's definitely a response from people, which is nice.
So
the London thing, I haven't found anyone in London yet. It's just kind of a pet dream.
Okay. So you are having very positive response. Obviously, it's not a job.
In that regard, yes. I've applied, like, through BCG Search, and also through, like, the WCL website, the CareerLink website as well, which,
I have a quick question.
Yeah.
You said you applied through BCG.
Mm-hmm.
Through the website, you, like, submitted your resume, and you probably got a rejection saying?
Only from one, actually, did I get rejection from them.
Maybe it's... because
I'm not sure about portal.
Yeah, one thing is if you're applying through places like BCG Search, which is our company,
mm-hmm.
it's only going when you send your. So this is probably also good to realize.
Yeah.
If you see a position that's posted on a search firm website, you're not submitting directly to the firm.
Right.
You're only going to the recruiters for them to evaluate if they can work with you.
Well, I actually found the address.
You mean you found the name of the law firm?
I don't remember what it was that I was applying to really specifically. It was one of
okay.
the positions. But I get, like, a lot of emails from BCG all the time, like, twice a week.
Yeah, it's probably because sometimes people can get confused about that.
Mm-hmm.
The address is usually, unless, they say the name of the firm, which we would never do, probably the address is just the recruiting office in that particular city. So be careful that... Make sure that some search firms sound like law firms. The names will be like, Jones and Walker LLP or something, and it looks like a law firm, but it's actually an executive search firm. And so be careful that when you're sending to something like a search firm, that you understand that if you don't hear from them, it doesn't mean the law firm has rejected you. It just means that the search firm hasn't responded. So that's why a lot of people, they will think that you know. So don't bother with the BCG emails and things like that. It's not gonna be fruitful.
Yeah, you are going right to the agency. All right, so you've sent out some letters of inquiry to alumni or other contacts to these targeted firms, and you've expressed interest in discussing, not necessarily in working there, right?
Right.
And interest in speaking with them about the dynamics of the marketplace there. Okay. What's the read? What are they telling you besides our hiring is full?
They've just been pretty open to just talking in general, like a lot of them just, generally about life and then about law school and what my interests are. And then they have a lot of these people have a lot of contacts. A lot of them are a little bit older and have been in the market for a while, so
right.
They've been willing to like forward my resume on to like some smaller firms and stuff like that.
They have been.
So we'll see if anything comes of that. But it's been good, like at least talking to people and making contacts in the city.
What are they? Have you laid the groundwork for follow up with them? That is to say, dear Jim, Jim, thanks so much for taking the time. And again, this should be relevant to all of you because these are the kinds of steps that you want to be taking. And also, you want to be structuring the relationships in a strategic way so that allows for follow up, so that you're not imposing upon them that hey, I'm contacting you for a job, but I'm contacting you because I'm looking to return to New York or go to New York or London or fill in the blank. And this is specifically how you can help me, if you'd be so kind. So how have you left things off with these contacts with respect to whether or not you're going to be back in touch with them or whether or not they're going to be back in touch with you?
Well, a lot of them have just said, let me know what you hear from these other firms and keep in contact with me regarding, after you take the bar and stuff like that. So basically, I'm just going to be in touch with them through summer.
Okay. Did they speak with you at all about New York-centric or London-centric resources? Did you ask them about that?
Some of them were just very simple, easy things to think about, just like going online, like the New York Times or something like that, and seeing what jobs are listed there. Usually it's more, I've done that, usually it's more associate, like lateral positions that they're looking for. Still looking into that kind of thing, but not really any, like I haven't done,
And what we're bringing up here is reciprocity to the extent that folks don't recognize that that's a resource available. You should all understand reciprocity is a resource that is available to a 3L, 4L, and alumnus, and that is asking a law firm in your target jurisdiction to be able to use their Office of Career Services, Office of Career Professional Development. And the way you do that is through our office, and this works the same in every law school. So you ask your OCPD office, us, to generate a letter of reciprocity to NYU, to whomever, to Tulane, etc., for use of their resources. But in advance of that, I would suggest that you contact Tulane or that target law school and ask what kind of benefits you get through reciprocity. Oh, well, we don't give you online access. You could only use the hard resources here. Well, in that case, that might be not as much value to you, so you might want to look at a neighboring law school. But you'll want to understand that you want to get the full appreciation for the resources that are offered on the reciprocal side before you make that application, because we only do it on a one-by-one bill. A quid pro quo, one school, one person. So you don't want to exhaust that. You want to make sure you're doing it, you're sending it out to the right school. So I encourage you to do that. But you're also going to want to consider using the resources there once you're there. You want to try to, now spring break is coming and gone. Did any of you go to your target jurisdictions over spring break? Did you, with an intent to, okay.
Okay.
Talk about that, Dan. Do you want me to? I don't want to sort of.
About the
setting up a trip, maybe to go down to your targeted jurisdiction.
Setting up a trip is always good, even if you're not able to secure any interviews. There are two ways. It's always easier to tell a firm, I'm going to be in town on this day, and I will be interviewing. If you would like to meet with me, I'd be happy to arrange something. It's much easier for a firm to say yes than to want to fly you in and come up with a day and have to go through three steps of finding availability. So that's the best thing you can do, is let them know you're going to be in town. If you can't arrange any interviews for that time, at least you can add that to your list of the number of times you've been in that city over the past year. It's much better to say, I've been in New Orleans, you know, live the, you know, San Francisco, for example. If you don't really have contacts, you can say, you know, I've been in San Francisco twice over the past 6 months. That's much better than, you know, not being there or being there only once, because it shows more of a familiarity. So sometimes if you have any reason to get out there at all, it's best if you can just go there more frequently, just to familiarize yourself and to be able to invite an interview by saying, I will be in town at this date.
And that goes for the same for your outreach. You're going up to New York, you're going to New Orleans, et cetera, Chicago. Dear Mr. Smith, or dear alumnus Smith, I plan on being in at this time or this during this week. And that's not a plane ticket you have to have purchased in advance. That's something that you might want to recognize you have the flexibility to do if you need to. That is to plan it in advance. Tell them, look, I plan on being there. I'd like to be there during this week. Would you have any time to meet with me? And depending, if you could start collecting yeses to that, then that might be worth the plane ticket or the train ticket out or up there to then follow through on those kinds of meetings. People, especially with the long-distance job search, it is the harder of the job searches for a number of reasons, not the least of which is you're not there in their face to meet with them face-to-face, and they don't know how serious you are about coming there. Brings up an important point with respect to letting the marketplace know that this is why you're doing this. It's not just a fishing expedition, because they get a lot of solicitations from law students around the world, around the country, saying, hey, you know, I'm just applying. And people don't know. If they don't see the Chicago address on the resume, then they're not sure of, and you're going to American University and you didn't go to school in Chicago beforehand, they're not sure, why are you doing this? What are your motivations? So I see a lot of legitimate, because anything can be legitimate. Shoot, I just want to try a new city. And that's legitimate, right? But not necessarily for an employer. But I see a lot of quote-unquote legitimate reasons that you can and should offer employers, perhaps in your cover letter and or through your outreach, as to why you're targeting their city. The city pull, that is to say, you don't have to convince a New Yorker that, hey, you're the greatest country in the world and I want to be in New York, I want to start my legal career here. You know, people understand that. It's not like that's the hardest, or London, the hardest city to impress upon people, that you're pulled by the city in and of itself, to say nothing of the sophisticated financial services work or something geographic-centric that makes sense for your search. But to the extent that you have a significant other pulling you there, a spouse, a wife, fiancé, etc., that can be a double-edged sword, and I would use it very much to my advantage. I will say, on the negative side, what are some negative attributes that you would think an employer would say if you admit that, hey, the reason why I'm interested in San Francisco is because my spouse is being relocated there? Is that something you want to put in your cover letter, and what are the ramifications of that?
I think if it's a spouse that's better than someone that you're dating, because if you break up, you know, you'll probably not want to be stuck in that city with that person, not having anything else. You'll want to just get away from that person. So that's the downside of saying that, you know, a boyfriend, a girlfriend. If you do know that you're going to be engaged or you're planning a future together, odds are if you're looking to move together to the same city, there's a reasonable commitment. One thing I've encouraged people to do is say, we're planning we're committed for a future together, and we would like San Francisco to be where we settle down permanently. Of course, you want to make sure that the your partner is comfortable with that. Like, I never
sign off on it.
Right, exactly. So that's one of the downsides. And if someone's moving out there for their job, is it a job that moves every 2 years, you know, someone in the military where they're moving to San Francisco, but in 2011 they'll be moving to Chicago, you know, so how permanent is the move? So the more you can establish settling down permanently, this is a place you want to be for the long term, it's going to increase your chances. So if I could just also say a word about the cover letters and telling your story. Realize that this is your, it's sort of approaching this like a lawyer. Your case is, what is the best case that I can make to this law firm about why they should hire me? And so if you think about not what, this is what every other cover letter I've seen said, or this is what my friend's cover letter said, and I'm just sort of copying it because they got a lot of interviews. Thinking outside the box of what are going to be the concerns that the employer has, and how can I effectively overcome some of those concerns that they have. So half of it's overcoming the concerns that they're going to have, which we're going to be talking about today. And the other half is making yourself stand out. These law firms are getting dozens of resumes a day, most of them from people in their city. You know, San Francisco, they're getting from Golden Gate, San Francisco, Berkeley, and then all the schools around, you know, California, UCLA. So they're getting inundated with resumes. So the question is, what can I do to make myself stand out? And my thought from reviewing all these resumes is, the more you can personalize yourself, the more you can just be more than just a name with an address and schools and experience. They're your, you know, your hobbies, things that you like doing, that you put on your resume, drawing you to, your connection to the city. Even sometimes people will, you know, if they're sending me an email or something, they'll use a little bit of humor to let their personality show through, so that it's more of a person, not just a resume from a person out of state. So I know it's sort of easy to say this, but harder to incorporate in real practice, but just keep that in mind, that the more you can make yourself stand out in terms of who you are, why do you want to practice in this particular area? Why are you interested in criminal law? Why are you interested in family law? Why are you interested in IP? Why are you passionate about it? And so having that come through can really make you stand out from the 98% of the other local people that are just writing, I'm interested in a criminal law and civil procedure, or, you know, litigation, criminal law. During my second year, I was in the clinic. During third year, I interned at the U.S. Attorney's Office. Therefore, blah. That's what everyone says. So if you could say, I love criminal law because, you know, first of all, this experience happened in my life, right? Or which got me interested in this, and I love advocating. It's part of my DNA since I was a child. I always wanted to be a lawyer, a criminal lawyer. Sort of making it more personal is one way to help you stand out. Does this make sense?
And to the extent that it's geographically driven, or you're trying to, as Dan said, you're trying to overcome these preconceived objections against you, if you're a foreign student, you need to be as emphatic as possible. I will be moving out there. My spouse and I will be moving out there in the summer. So you just disabuse them of any notion that you're on this fishing expedition or that it's a mere possibility.
And one good point as a footnote to that is, even if you're not sure which area you're going to be living in, I'm always more impressed when people that say, I'm moving to Washington, D.C., preferably the Bethesda, Rockville area, or, you know, the Cleveland Park, Woodley Park area, or something like that. I don't really care if I'm the employer where they're looking to move, but it shows more familiarity with the city, that they've actually taken that next step to look into an actual neighborhood in which they're interested.
And on the upswings, another upswing, I think, of having the significant other, especially if it's a spouse, are the relocation services that the spouse's employer may offer. Yeah. That's something you want to explore vigorously. Very often, companies will offer that kind of formal or informal network. The HR person will have either connections with attorneys, or they have an actual spouse assistance program to help you make connections in your job search. So very much try to leverage that, again, particularly with the spousal relationship, but even if a significant other, it might be less formal, but they might also be willing to open up some of their resources with you. Where, what are some of the objections you're facing, or what have been any positive outcomes so far to your long-distance job search?
Well, started out with a lot of, I just found out that we're moving together mid-January, so this is like a week, you know, I didn't join in the fall. I really want to do a judicial clerkship, so I spoke to the clerkship coordinator. Actually, it just so happened that one of the San Francisco courts had a computer glitch in their job offer. They couldn't come up until February. So,
excellent.
But it was a lot of cold calling and calling each chamber and saying, you know, yes, are you looking for a clerk? And then I've spoken to a few professors who here who know, who have contacts of people, of attorneys that work here now, but were out in the Bay Area, were practiced there for a few years. So I've met them, and they put me in contact with people up there. It's mostly actually been a more nonprofit contact, but because I'm in the domestic violence clinic, so that's kind of where I'm getting, I'm talking to nonprofits are doing domestic violence work, but they contract they send the cases out to family law firms.
Okay.
You know, when there's other issues, so they have the contacts with those family law firms. So that's kind of how I'm talking to them. And, you know, they're sending my resume out there and stuff. So something like that. Obviously, the career link on the website. It's just been a lot of cold calling.
It's really, you're describing more warm calling than cold calling. I mean, you're really not calling out of the blue. You're calling with a logical reason, a nexus, some connection. So don't, you know, I'm sure you didn't mean it this way, but don't sort of dismiss it as I'm just like sort of pick up the phone and call, making a lot of these random calls. You're being very focused, and these are productive steps that you're taking, although, again, it can seem frustrated because, you know, nothing's closing right now. You are taking the right steps forward.
It's surprising how the words you use to describe what you're doing can make a big difference in your incentive and motivation. Like, if I notice that sometimes when people refer to it as just cold calling, networking, it has such a negative connotation. But if you, and this is sort of, apologies in advance for sounding kind of Tony Robbins-ish, but if think of it as planting seeds. Strategic outreach. So it's part of something that's leading to something. It's not just throwing things to the wind. And if you think about it that way, that it's kind of like when you get a job, it's here's the time from when you start looking, and here's the time from, I'm sorry, this is the time from when a firm starts looking, and this is, all right, let me go back here. This is the time when a firm starts posting the position. This is the time when the firm actually has a need. So there can be anywhere from, you know, 1 to 2 to 3 month lag between the time from when a firm says, they don't necessarily say, let's put a posting up, but gosh, we're really overworked. This is crazy. We need to think about hiring someone. Too busy, 1 month passes by, you know, they say, you know, let's talk to HR, let's get this going, we need to come up with a job description. 2 months. And then finally, you know, 3 months is when they post this up. And then they get inundated with hundreds of resumes, or however many they may be. Sometimes it can just be, you know, 2 or 3 resumes. So if you're constantly planting seeds, the time you want to get in is before there's actually a posting. So by networking and strategic outreach and all that other stuff, you can plant your seeds around here, so they may say, you know what, we've been thinking about hiring somebody, why don't you come and meet us? That way we don't have to go through the effort of screening out all these different resumes, which can take a lot of time. So it's always about planting seeds, and they may not blossom right away, but the more seeds you plant, the more likely you're going to be in this zone when a position comes up.
Quickly on the San Francisco thing, I assume Craigslist is a no-brainer for you, right? You are looking vigorously at that idealist because you're looking at family. In Washington, in Washingtonia at least, with respect to family law, every year puts out the best family lawyers.
in the D.C. area. It's an excellent resource if you're interested in family lawyers. Well, who cares, Matt? I'm living in San Francisco. The point is, the San Francisco have a similar kind of publication, the San Francisco Daily, whatever. Is there some kind of publication for family lawyers out there? I'd be asking that kind of question.
Or one thing you can do is find who the leaders are in Washington, D.C.
Mm-hmm.
Like in D.C., I just know, you know, Sandy Ain, Rita Bank. Those are probably, you know, among the two top family lawyers in Washington, D.C. Send them an email saying, I know you're one of the top, you know, regarded as one of the top family lawyers in Washington, D.C. I'm very interested in family law, and I was wondering if you happen to know any colleagues or people who you'd recommend contacting in the San Francisco area. Therefore, if they say, actually, you know, I do have a friend or someone in San Francisco, contact this person, you can contact that person and say, I was referred to you from Sandy Ain, and Sandy Ain's a huge person, and so that's going to get you much more credibility. Yeah, I don't know how much he weighs, or how tall he is, but so that's another sort of strong strategy.
Yeah, I mean, we have to. I just want to sort of move along because sometimes professors, if they have the room at 1 o'clock, we'll start looking around 11:50 or 12:50. New York IP. You going to the? So we had conversation. Anything germinate from that? Any next steps or?
Yeah, I dealt with that exact same issue when I was looking for trademark positions. So it's, that's walking the fine line. It's hard, but it's necessary.
It's not IP law. It's a Federal Communications Bar Association is doing a program here. Did you have any interest in that? Is that a completely off base vis-a-vis your interest? I think I know the answer, but let me throw it out there to you.
Well, I'd rather have, my number one priority is geography.
Yeah. Okay, so, well, that's important to know.
So I'd rather have a litigation, I'd 10 times rather have a litigation job in New York than a media job.
Right. But to the extent that it's the Federal Communications Bar Association, you would expect that they would probably have chapters, or at least under the ABA, maybe not the FCBA. But are you looking at the bar associations that practice that? Because I'll tell you, a lot of students I've spoken with in the past have gotten their jobs through those kinds of student bar memberships in the ABA or other agencies. But to the extent that it's geographic driven, number one, we go back to the initial comments that, look, New York first, practice area second. To the extent that you can connect the two, God bless you, really, you know, your trifecta, so to speak. If you also incorporate a good salary, but so the New York searches first, and the practice area is where you're more flexible. Yes, you're looking at litigation. Yes, you're looking at IP, but now is the time to expand it beyond that, without being, you know, falling into the diminishing returns of just throwing out anything.
But it's hard to expand that interest base if it's not genuine.
Sure.
Because then the conversation really isn't believable, because I've had that conversation with other people. You do real estate. I love real estate. You know, it's hard for me to really show that.
Sure, sure.
And I feel that they pick up on it.
Right.
So I'm making an effort to stay in areas where I can have a real connection with someone.
Right.
So it's harder to expand.
Well, do you ask people to sort of buy into the genuineness of it, look, Ms. Jane, thank you very much for speaking with me. I realize that, you know, it's really hard to tend to hire laterally in IP in New York, et cetera. But given that, you know, that it really is my first objective to get up here and to do IP, of course, do you have any recommendations for me about how else I should approach this? Because I don't want to be disingenuous in it, but I want to also set myself up that I can practice and I'll get some good skills that, if not immediately, at least or intermediately, transferable into IP. So I would sensitize people to the fact that you are genuine about this, but that they also appreciate the fact that you're looking for a job that's going to give you good lawyering skills, if that can't be. And you can have people buy into that campaign. Not, well, you told me you're IP exclusive. People are generally more savvy about post-law school trajectory and the need to take on a position that's going to get you experience.
Real quickly, what is it about IP that you're very interested in? Is it litigation or counseling?
Really both, and that's why the litigation angle has been more than okay for me. But and I try and talk up my experience with the clinic as much as possible, because that's been incredibly positive. And I just feel like the type of client that the field attracts, there's this creativity element and this kind of building from the ground up someone else's vision. I just much prefer working with someone creativity and a vision than sitting around like a boardroom.
All right. One thing just to keep in mind, this is for everybody, not just you, is don't confuse the classroom with the real world, in the sense of, in the real world, in clinics, you're working with people that really need your help. In an interview, talking about working with the clients from the ground up, it could be perceived as a little naive, because a lot of these firms, who their clients are, it's just, you know, big company, a woodworking company that has, you know, 400 trademarks, and the general counsel needs you to just manage their portfolio. You're never going to talk creatively building up from the ground. It's just not like that. So what I would, in some cases, maybe in smaller firms, you can get some good clients, but by and large, it's a business, and there's not that much sort of glamour that you see in the classroom. Studying or in a clinic where you're working with someone that really needs your help. So in that case, what I would do is talk to people about the day-to-day. What do you do on a day? In terms of litigation, don't focus on the clients and building the... Talk about what is it that you would like about litigation advocacy. Do you like to competitive nature? Do you hate to be wrong? Do you love to be right? What is it that you love about advocacy? And therefore, if you focus on, you know, and counseling and prosecution, it's very administrative. You like, you know, handling, you know, being on top of deadlines, very administrative. It's administrative law, the counseling and prosecution aspect of it. So there you've got administrative law and litigation. You could transfer those to a lot of different areas if you dig beneath sort of who the clients are in the casebooks and focus on the skills and the day-to-day practice, you can transfer much more easily.
I'm sorry that I have to abruptly cut it here. And what I'll do, and if Dan has some time, we could take it outside at least to speak with the three of you too, if you find it worth your while, because we didn't get to your jurisdictions. But obviously, you know, in 50 minutes there's so much you can do, but the other class does have the room at 12:50. Look, I'm here, we're here.
Talk to Matt as much as you can. He's an expert on this stuff, one of the very best in the city, if not the best in the city when it comes to these types of things. So take advantage of it.
Thank you.
Flattery will get you pizza.
Exactly.